mention that the DRO reviews, but we, Water Utilities brought in a plan to connect Code Action.
Okay, let's call the meeting to order. It is 9:08.
Good morning.
Let's do roll call, please. Okay.
Brenda Arnold. Sally Channon.
Here.
Michael Howe.
David Wallach from Guam.
Jean Matthews.
Here.
Michael Owens. Debbie Majors. Bogdan Piero. Olga Pieto.
Here.
Bob Saban.
Here.
Mark Stivers.
Here.
And Mike Vergetti.
Here.
And Gary Dunmire.
Here.
We have a quorum, Madam Chair. Okay, thank you. Thank you, everybody. Now we have the agenda. Can I get a motion to adopt the agenda from the
So moved.
Second.
Yes.
Okay. And a motion to approve the minutes. I do actually have a comment on the minutes, but did anybody else have a comment on the minutes?
We got a first and second, but we didn't have a vote.
Oh, sorry, I apologize. We have a 10 o'clock deadline. Okay, so can we have a vote to approve the agenda? All in favor?
Aye.
Okay, and then a motion to approve the minutes. Again, I have a correction to the minutes. Does anyone else?
I just saw one thing that's a typo.
Okay.
72, it's just that they said that.
Yes, so I sent it to
anyone else? Under 1D, the second bullet point, it says that and is currently working on the comprehensive plan. I have the change here. It's the consultant is reviewing the comprehensive plan. Kind of just for clarification. So would someone like to make a motion to approve the minutes with the two amendments?
So moved.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All opposed. Thanks. Okay. Any comments from the chair? What we're getting ready to do is Bike to School Day. National Bike to School Day is May 10th, and we have three schools that are participating in the city of West Palm Beach. We have Roosevelt Middle School, Northmore Elementary. We submitted our transportation alternatives application for, and the third one is Grassy Waters School. We also have interest from Westward, but they haven't really followed through with us. But we have police there, we have Save Kids there, we have our sustainability department there, and then we have our transportation initiatives there, all supporting the kids biking to school and hopefully getting some input with some bike audits for each of the neighborhoods. That's our big thing. We're also working on a mobility fee. That's moving forward. And now we're getting into doing an intense study on Okeechobee Boulevard. Kind of big news on our side. And now for Francesca for the Bicycle Pedestrians Coordinator's Report.
Sure. Good morning, everyone. Happy May. It's National Bike Month. You get to celebrate it twice. So I just want to, you have your liaison report in front of you. I just want to highlight a few things. The Safe Routes to School workshop, which is mandatory for anyone who's interested in applying for Safe Routes to School funds. The workshop in District 4 is upcoming and is scheduled for May 18th from 9 a.m. to 1, and it's going to be down in Fort Lauderdale, to my understanding. Another thing I wanted to highlight is the road impact fee workshop. MPO is working to schedule a road impact fee workshop tentatively in May, so I just want to put that on your radar. A lot of people are doing investigations on mobility fees, so that might be a helpful conversation. Also, I just wanted to mention that the draft Complete Streets Design Guidelines will be presented at a working group meeting on Wednesday, May 10th from 2 p.m. to 4 p.m. So I just want to put that also on your radar. We'll be talking today about FDOT's Complete Streets Design Guidelines and hoping that we're on the same page, and definitely want to get your feedback on our local design guidance.
I have a question, Francesca, about the Safe to Route School workshop. I've contacted the project manager and asked him how much money would be for our section. He said $7 million for total for Florida, but how much for our section does he expect?
So it's, from what I understand of the program, it's not necessarily broken down from the state level. It's $7 million statewide, and so whoever applies for the funds, you know, is... as long as it's...
First come, first serve?
Yeah, first come, first serve. As long as the applications are eligible. So
okay.
I haven't heard of any county or district breakdown.
Was it $750,000 max last year? Was that, do you remember?
There is a minimum of 200... I'm sorry, minimum of 700... I'm sorry. A minimum of $250,000.
Okay.
And... I do believe it was $750,000 last year, and I'm not sure if the new maximum, but I'm sure that minimum is still $250,000.
Okay. Great. Thank you.
Sure.
Okay. So, do we have any members from the general public or any public comments on any of the agenda items? No one wants to speak? Set up to speak, so now we'll go to item number two, our information items. Number A, letter A, we'll review our draft financial year 2018 to 2022 transportation improvement program.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Andrew Euler. I'm the TIP coordinator here. I'm pretty new to this position, about a month in, so I'm getting a good grasp on it all, but we should be able to answer all your questions, and if not, have to get back to you on some things. But this will go quick. I just want to give you this first reading of the draft TIP for 18-22. And this is really just an executive summary. And our full report should be available by next week. We're putting that together, getting that finalized. And so from here on out until next month's board meeting, we'll be taking the public comment and also all of your suggestions and review. So if you haven't had a chance to really review it yet, still have some time. So this is really just a preliminary informational presentation. So just here's a basic schedule where we're at right now in May, and of course by next month we'll be finalizing that fiscal year 18 and 22 TIP. And so that starts basically right at the beginning of July. Now the purpose of the course is just to review and comment. We really want to, if we can, provide a document that's really educational and easily understood by the public, by our staff as well, and then all of our committees. So if there's anything in it that we can really improve upon to make it easier to understand and provide projects in an easier manner, please let us know. That's what we're going for. And of course, any other products to view to see if there's anything else to add or details, if they're not too confusing or you don't provide enough information. And we'll be looking at some upcoming construction and then other program projects. A few changes from last year.
There's one
yes.
thing. There's so many projects here, and I have a hard time figuring out where they are. There was a way to just, like, project 15, point out where it is and be able to blow up to the Google Map to see what's going on there. That would be a lot easier for me.
And I can answer that real quickly. So what you don't see in here right now is just the larger printout map that we will have in there, but we are working to update our online mapping. So right now our online mapping we have is basically click on the project. So you can see it there, you can see what project number it is, but you have to go back to the document to view more information. So we're trying to integrate all that into the mapping as well. So that should be coming out hopefully soon as well.
So you're saying that the information is on, for example, each one of these projects has got like a one-liner here. If you had that and be able to say that number and you can match that with a sheet, is that what you're saying?
Yes, but it would be more starting from the mapping side. So it would just be like an online interactive map.
So you can poke it out.
Yeah, click on the project.
Okay.
So, yep. And of course those tools have put an address in and a zoom to that kind of area. So those are all ones that are provided through Esri mapping. The major platform for that. So they have some tools that can help you navigate a little bit more easily. So that's something we're trying to strive for. It's a good question though, but yes, we're always trying to provide a way to show these in a map. Okay, so it's some administrative updates. This is just some changes to how you're seeing it in the document. Two ones is we're adding a Sun Trails project type there. So that's a new program I'll talk about in a second here. And then secondly, we changed the wording from minor projects to other FDOT and local projects. So just a better description of what kind of projects those really are, because some of them are, you know, pretty big projects in that section. And those really incorporate a lot of products that we ask from the jurisdictions that don't always have federal and state funds attached, but we still want to know what they're doing in their areas with local funds. So you can kind of see, like, when you get that mapping portion, you can see all the products working together and see how, they're building up one another. I'm just going to go through a few of the sections here that you'll see in the tables. And this first one is a major MPO project, so these are our priority projects that we have ranked. 5-year target of $200 million, and what you see there for programs right now, $126 million. A large amount of that money, if you see in your table, if you have in front of you, is that Triwell project. And you can see that's number ranked number 8. And you can see in the needs section there, around $73 million. So a good chunk of that, once DOT has gone through that PD and needs to start that back up, you can probably see that start to get programmed in those fiscal years, which would bring us back up to closer to the $200 million mark. Some other changes this year. We allocated $3 million to construction for Battle Road. So last year, that was in off years. That wasn't programmed, so that's a program. Same for Atlantic Avenue. Construction in 21 has been added. And then I mentioned the US 1's study here. There's a product line in there for it. It's ranked number 12 there from Camino Real to Indian Town Road, so that goes most of the portion of Palm Beach County. And we're just kicking off our multimodal corridor study. I'm not sure if we have an update for that today or not, but
yes, we're
going to
talk about the US 1 corridor solution.
Great, so that's going to be that project right there, and you can see our progress on that, starting that up. I'll go through a few of the other programs we have here. Local initiatives program, so this is a competitive process you apply for through our program, or our MPO. Fire target here has $85 million. It's sort of an estimate that it's really growing every year a little bit. And then right now we have funding $93 million. So like I said, it's a little bit that is a little bit more money coming in than that $85 million shows there. And then also we have a lot of, these projects are going on state roads, so we have a lot of opportunities for other funding to come in for that. So that's why we're able to have more funding available for those years. And I just want to mention about this program, how it kind of works. And we have this reserve funding as well. If you look in the local initiatives table there, in the outer years of the TIP, you'll start to see some reserve funding. And so we just went through our last local initiatives application process. And a lot of those projects that we do finally approve through the board, their construction will start in fiscal year 23, but we do have some reserve funding in 22, a good chunk in there. And so a lot of those projects, if there is some reserve funding, DOT tries to move some of those projects up a year in construction. So some of those ones that we did originally have scheduled for 23 might move up to 22. And of course, all the projects are funded for construction except one right now, that's Lake Worth Road. Transportation Alternatives Program, I'm sure it's something that you guys are really familiar with as well. The 3-year target of $9 million for the federal funding. $18 million has been allocated for this year, 18 through 20. And so that's the total amount of cost estimate altogether. So you can see how much is being provided there by that federal funding, and then the total there, so about half. Some of the highlights, all the projects have been funded into construction, the TIP, and a few of those are actually starting up pretty soon here, August, September of 2017. And you'll see in here, some of these projects don't have any funding in the fiscal years for 2018 and 22, but they did have previous year funding. But if they haven't started construction yet, we like to keep those in there until construction starts so you can kind of see how those projects are playing out as well. the Sun Trail program. So this is that new program I was talking about. And there's a description early on in the packet that says what this program is about. And really, you can see right here, this is a statewide trails network in coordination with DAP, Office of Grooming and Trails. And we only have one project right now in the TIP on this program. And then on the right here, you can see, this is from an online map they had, all the roadways that are eligible within our county. Right there. And they have it broken down, it looks like existing, acquisition required, and the program funded ones. Like I said, there's only one right now. I'm not sure if it's showing up on the map right now, but that is that program. And then some highlights for fiscal year 2018. And these are additional, in your packet, these are additional construction projects that are going on that haven't already been mentioned in the previous section. So that last column in the previous section has like some notes and when those projects are starting to go to construction. Well, this is another section here that has some major projects that are going to construction. So a few ones I highlighted here, but there's more in the packet. Turnpike widening on Boyd Beach, North Palm Beach, resurfacing at SR80, resurfacing at I-95 there, that Northwood rail connection, and then additional lanes on the I-95 Atlantic interchange. And then some significant changes that you'll see. From the fiscal year 27 TIP to the fiscal year 18-22, fiscal year 17-21, 18-22. I have some major ones here, interchanges and turnpike widenings. You can see some of the PEs being advanced on those I-95 interchanges, and then a lot of the turnpike ones being delayed to later years, or even to outside of TIP. And this is the last slide I have, actually, to do, of course. So, like I said, we're really looking for some good feedback. Like I said, the mapping is something that we're really trying to push forward. Some other ways that maybe we can show these projects in a way that's easily understood by the public. If there's some, again, if there's any projects out there that have some vague descriptions and can really be beefed up, or if there's any other improvements, we're really looking for those. And like I said, the full document should come out next week. And it'll be approved next month at the board meeting. So you will see this document again, the final draft, next month.
Is there an index in the back that might say State Road 80 equals Southern Boulevard, or you know TIP equals? So there's a lot of acronyms.
Mm-hmm. We do usually provide an acronym list.
There is. Okay.
And it should be. It might not be in there right now, but there is usually gloss in the back.
And there are
two. Oh, okay.
That's a very basic one for phases, though. But we can make sure we put some other ones.
And then for the roads too, because not everybody knows State Road 80 is Southern.
Yeah.
Can you go back 3 slides?
Yes. And also, actually, we try to. Something I just didn't do here.
Okay. I-95 in Atlantic, what is State Road 806 interchange? What's State
Atlantic
Road?
Atlantic
Avenue. Uh-huh.
It's Atlantic Avenue.
That is Atlantic Avenue.
Atlantic.
Correct.
Oh, Atlantic. Oh, Atlantic is 806.
Yeah, I can get parentheses for that, so.
I got it.
So, that is a good point. So, when we get the information from DOT, these projects, they come in as State Road 806, and a lot of times they don't have the other local names on it. And so we do try to go back and put the local name first, and then you'll either see in parentheses the state road or US route or a slash. So, but I'll look into if there's another way we can maybe make a glossary as well. That'd be pretty.
Yeah, and even a map showing the canal, so that somebody would know where L30 canal is, like the third bullet down.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I have a few comments. There was a couple of, well, first of all, I'd like to say it's exciting to see the tri-rail extension moving forward. I've been quite a few times. But there was a couple of things. There was a couple of small projects on there, the interchange expansions in West Palm Beach.
Mm-hmm.
And just as a general comment, it'd be nice if FDOT reached out to the city to talk to us about those. If I can leave my card here if you guys want to pass it on. And then I know that we passed it here, but the North Lake interchange, I think, at the MPO board wasn't actually approved, and now it's on the tip. So it should be in the long range transportation plan first before it's on the tip.
And yes, and there is a approval yesterday by the TAC to not show that on the TIP.
Okay. So if anybody wanted to have any discussion about that here, or make a motion to take it off, I mean, I thought that was kind of a big piece. It should be, it's not in the city of West Palm Beach, it's in Palm Beach Garden, so there's anyone here for them, so it kind of makes it a little bit harder. Yeah, so the I-95, the North Lake Boulevard, that wasn't approved by the MPO board to go on the long range, they had recommended to go on the long range transportation plan. That was one of our items last
month.
Yeah.
Yes.
But we didn't like any of the alternatives for the...
Right, it was kind of... And now it's being advanced to P&E for financial year 2018.
Administrative note, just because the item is the information item doesn't mean that you can't make a motion, an action towards it.
It just seems like that they're kind of...
Sounds like what you're suggesting is that we make a motion to point this out.
Yes, absolutely.
That'll put it in the system.
That maybe it shouldn't be on the tip if it's not on the long-range transportation plan. Should we fund things that we haven't actually planned out yet? Or if it's not vetted and it looks like it's being forwarded.
Yes.
Like, that was the other thing, is like there's the other two small projects where nobody had reached out to the city of West Palm Beach, and we actually tabled the item for the one that was in the city of West Palm Beach because nobody had talked to us. Even our engineer came here to talk about it because it was like...
I know from my standpoint, you know, we never saw tips. We didn't see anything about this, which it is very good that we're getting involved, but it's like what you're pointing out is that we haven't had a chance to really see these things from inception to plan.
Mm-hmm.
And, I just wrote down, review the long-range transportation plan because I know what's in there.
Well, there was last month they came to amend it and they added the four interchanges.
Yeah, which they needed to do, yeah.
Yeah, so... We tabled one, which was the one on 45th and West Palm, but the other one that was, I guess it was tabled, is it tabled at the other committee? And then it went to the board, and then that didn't get approved? I'm not sure.
I'm trying to remember what
the... I just know it didn't get approved at the board, so I'm not sure if the MPO doesn't recommend it to go on the long-range transportation plan, does it go on the long-range transportation plan? And then can we, suggest or make a motion to not have it on the TIP if it's not in the long-range transportation plan, because maybe there wasn't public input that was properly done.
Are you seeing
that? There's nobody from Boca, so it's hard. No, Boca. Palm Beach Gardens. Sorry.
Sure.
Yeah, I remember we brought the items to the board, 45th was excluded, which one is it, Glaze, that was already in our LRCP.
I think the first three.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know if I'm correct if I'm wrong, but I think that the North Lake, of course, is that they didn't approve it, right? So right now, I think there is the understanding that it's not going to be on the TIP,
yeah.
But we're still showing up right now.
Okay.
But I think that's the direction right now.
Wasn't good with the TIP?
Yeah.
Okay.
Because of last month's discussion.
Okay.
Well, do we want to make a motion saying that North Lake needs further discussion and an approval prior to being placed on the TIP?
Yeah, looking back on the minutes from last month,
mm-hmm.
we made a motion recommending the LRTP and the amendments. We added this thing.
Correct.
I'm sorry.
We did.
Yes.
But There's another committee and the board.
Yes.
And it was my understanding that the board didn't recommend.
Well, the board didn't pick up on this recommendation, is what you're saying. It would be helpful if the other committees had also made the recommendation.
But we recommended adoption, others did not.
Correct.
And so some of our discussion was that you know, we weren't really happy with the alternatives, and that there was, you know, they're going to eat up a lot of land, and then there wasn't somebody here representing Palm Beach Gardens to talk about that. So I think that with the other committees that maybe it has, and the board, it has. And so if it's not being approved on the board, who's above us,
yes,
then should it be on the TIP, which, you know, if it's not being approved on the long-range transportation plan, should it be funded?
Yeah, I understand.
And forwarded.
Yes, I understand what you're saying. And the board can do anything they want, so.
Okay.
But what I'm trying to say is we made a point.
Okay, but I guess maybe it should be looked at further, or it should be a discussion, that's all.
Well, we made a motion last month.
That,
we need
yeah.
to redo the motion and make a motion this month to let people
reiterate
know.
The same from last month to please, you know, reconsider our last motion.
So you're suggesting that we recommend adoption to amend the LRTP to add I-95 and North Lake on there. Wouldn't it be maybe more just looking into this and doing more outreach for I-95 and North Lake Boulevard, since, you know, we recommended approval but not everybody did, and so maybe there's some design elements that need to be looked at or something more planning ahead of time?
Here's how I hear. Here's the whole point here is that this committee needs to get information early enough that they can at least review what's being planned. And just from a basic planning standpoint.
Mm-hmm.
And we haven't been getting that very, we're starting to get that now. And so this is all good.
Mm-hmm.
So, but we need to work on the system to make sure that they're getting the information to us soon enough that we can make these comments.
I wasn't here last month, and I'm not really following your discussion, but it, under the prioritization on the TIP, it says in order to be included in the TIP, a project has to be consistent with the MGO-adopted LRTP. But I'm hearing you say that some of these things are not on the LRTP.
Under interchanges, the last one, North Lake Boulevard, did not get approval on the MPO board.
Okay, so it is not, it doesn't meet the prioritization thing. It is not consistent with the MPO adopted LRT long range transportation plan.
That's
not on there.
That's what I understand. If somebody else
correct.
Would like
that is
to correct,
correct
me, then okay, thank you.
Okay.
Yes.
And you're saying that it's appearing on this slide just because it hasn't been removed yet?
Yes, I guess it's more of a, we're still showing it here, but we're under the, I guess.
The placeholder?
Yeah, I mean, it's not really, like we talked about last month, it hasn't been, it's not an LRTP, and the board did not approve it. So, yes, it wouldn't make it into the TIP, but it's still here right now, I'm showing. So it's not a good way for me to show it, I'm saying, really. But I guess that's the, yes.
So I guess the committee, they're saying that you would like more information about North Lake before including it into the board. If you want a clearer way to show the project in the TIP without it seeming as though it's programmed.
Well, no, it's just that the statement is that in order to be included in the transportation improvement program, it must be consistent with the adopted long-range transportation plan. So the issue is two. It shouldn't be there.
Yeah.
Two.
Correct.
I mean, either that needs to be changed so you can put something in a TIP that's not in the approved, or they need to go through the process of a document. Because you can't put out, I mean, in terms of communicating to the public, you can't say, hey, if it's here, then anybody's going to look at it and assume that it's consistent with the adopted LRTP. And if it doesn't appear on the LRTP, then, it, I mean, you can't have it both ways.
It doesn't have to be spelled out specifically in the LRTP, but it has to be consistent with the LRTP. So, I mean, if we're doing these things around the county, and this one would want to be put in there, that could be indexed in as because it's part of the LRTP, but it wasn't spelled out specifically. I think that's what I get out of this. So.
Maybe a motion could be that anything that's on the TIP that is not consistent with the LRTP shouldn't be included on the TIP. That should be taken off the TIP. That's to be consistent with the own of that own documentation.
Yeah, well, I haven't looked at the TIP in its reference. We, you know, this team needs to be aware of what is on the TIP. We have not been putting that much input from the LRTP in this committee.
Okay.
We should.
Agreed.
Sorry to put you on the spot, but would you mind giving us a little bit more background about the I-95 at North Lake Interchange and its place in the TIP and the motions of the board?
More background, how? What's the question?
What we're saying, we're having discussion here. I wasn't here last month. Last month, this committee tabled a recommendation on this I-95 at North Lake improvement and I-95 at 45th Street improvement.
We approve North Lake here on our committee. But the question was that if the MPO board didn't approve it, does it go on the long-range transportation plan? And if it says in the TIP that it must be consistent with the long-range transportation plan, can it be on the TIP, like we're being shown today?
Okay, so to get the facts right, this committee recommended that the MPO board would approve the long-range plan amendments that were presented to them last month. Is that correct?
Yes.
With discussion,
with the exception of one of them.
Except 45th. But going back,
okay.
going back North Lake, we did have discussions that, you know, it was a lot of land taken up, and maybe that wasn't the best design, but we still recommended approval.
Okay, but then that amendment to the long range plan did not. Just so you guys are aware, that amendment did not go to the MPO board because the technical committee of the MPO said, let's talk more about it before we recommend approval or not to the MPO board.
Okay.
So the MPO board has not yet adopted a long-range plan amendment.
Okay.
Now, that's the status quo. Projects to receive funding in the TIP need to be in the long-range plan first. However, the Department of Transportation gives us the content of the TIP, their proposed use of dollars to accomplish their projects. So they have essentially said, we were counting on the MPO approving the long-range plan amendment, and we are proceeding at risk by showing you a proposed funding for North Lake and 95 in the TIP. If that doesn't happen, if the long-range plan amendment doesn't get approved, then the DOT doesn't get the money to do the project at North Lake. But they're asking the MPO, would you please approve the TIP with North Lake funding in it, knowing full well that they are proceeding at risk.
Okay. So it is basically...
So they're going backwards.
We're showing it as basically a placeholder here.
Yeah.
Because it's not... It will come out if it is not ultimately adopted.
Or they will find other money to fund it with.
Okay.
So the LRTP and the TIP really control... They have the authoritative control over any federal dollar that's spent on the project. The state could choose to use state money to build or to spend on the design contract, they have said verbally that they're not in the business of building projects that the local governments don't support. But, you know.
But they can.
Statements like that get vetted in case studies. So, you know, we would expect that if the local MPO says we aren't sure that interchange improvements that have been shown to us at North Lake are a good idea, that the department would slow down and not spend money. So we're in the midst of that discussion. I don't know really how to advise you to move forward. I think you've got discretion in your recommendation to the MPO. You can acknowledge that this is a placeholder and you have reservations about including it, or you can be a little stronger than that and say, we don't think you should include funding in the TIP for projects that are not in the long-range plan, giving us a better chance of understanding what they are before we say, yeah, go spend whatever it is, $5 or $6 million for the design of that interchange. But it's really up to you guys. I mean, we're struggling with this too, because we think the department put the cart before the horse. They're trying to accelerate projects that are not in our long-range plan. So these are things we said we didn't envision spending money on in the next 25 years. And now they're saying we want to spend lots of money on them next year. So that's a little bit of a different way of operating. Sometimes when there are projects that everyone says hooray, you say, great, I'm glad you found money. In this particular case, the project has some adverse impacts, and it's raising some eyebrows.
Thank you. Clarify a little bit?
It's clear. I'm not sure what we want to do particularly, but.
Well, as a committee, we make recommendations to the board after reviewing all the data, and we can basically say that if we want this to be looked at further or we want it to be taken off, I mean, that's what we can do. It's a matter of, you know, making sure, do we want it to be approved in the long-range transportation plan first? Make sure that that recommendation moves forward.
And I hate to make a motion because I only read the minutes from last month's meeting, but I feel that we should, the committee recommended that LRTP for North Lake be adopted. There's nothing wrong in reminding the board that we made the recommendation to be adopted, but I do think that it should be in the LRTP before you start moving into the TIP and spending money that way. And that needs to be, that needs to be reinforced to the state, because otherwise, I mean, you start spending a lot of money on stuff and then, you know, it just happens, sort of. So if there are serious questions about whether or not it should be part of our long-range transportation plan, I don't think it should be appearing in a TIP.
So
I put that in a motion. I move that we reiterate to the board that we supported the addition of these interchange improvements to the long-range transportation plan, but that we recommend against their inclusion in the TIP until such time as they have been approved by the board in the long-range transportation plan.
And I'll second that. If we could just simply add to that, that additional information be provided to us and to all the MPO boards as to why this project is being moved up. Often there is urgency to a project that we are just not privy to yet. So if there's good reason why it's being moved up, please let us know. I think that's information that every level of the MPO.
For example, who are inconvenienced by the lack of urgency on the.
We can all sit around and guess what the urgency is. I'd rather hear from the state and hear why this is being pushed forward. So if we could amend the motion to add that additional information could be provided to all the MPO boards.
Okay. Do you accept the amendment?
Yes, I would accept that. You're talking about, I mean, in the future, if they're going to put something on the TIP that's not in the LRTP, it should come with an explanation from the state about the emergency.
Yes, but I'm asking specifically for North Lake.
For North Lake, that procedurally, well, first of all, that we approved it in our last meeting, So, but with that said, we don't think that, just trying to reiterate everything so that everybody's kind of on board. But with that said, procedurally, we don't agree with the fact that it's on the TIP and not the long-range transportation plan. And that with things like this, Northlake, we want them to come to us to explain to us why, because maybe it should, we don't understand why it's so important to push
correct.
It forward faster.
Yes, that's correct.
Okay.
Good.
Would you guys discussion on that?
We can have a discussion.
Take a vote. Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? Okay, unanimous. Okay, thank you. Okay, thank you, Andrew. Is there any more questions for Andrew?
Welcome aboard.
Thank you. Okay, our next item is Valerie, I assume, the US 1 multimodal kickoff. Thank you. Thank you, Nick.
I'm the multimodal manager here at the Palm Beach UPO, and I'm excited to tell you about our US 1 multimodal corridor study that we're kicking off. So I'm going to just give a brief overview of the project, the goals and timelines and next steps. So this is actually a project in our MPO priority project list. We have design money, so Lauren Duff design engineering money for fiscal year 2021. And it's from US 1 from Camino Real and Boca Raton all the way to Indian Town in Jupiter. So we're looking at complete streets, connect missing bicycle facilities and missing sidewalk facilities on the corridor, and upgrade the transit along the corridor. So it's a big project. It's almost around 42 miles, crosses 14 communities, and it's PalmTran's highest bus ridership route. So currently, the Bolt is limited stop service, so express service that runs from West Palm Beach to Boca Raton and back, but just for like an hour in the morning and in the evening. The Route 1 runs from Palm Beach Gardens to Boca Raton, and that carries the most ridership of all of its routes. Yeah, so looking at the corridor, there's a lot going on, a lot of destinations along the corridor, and in some cases it looks pretty good. There's, bicycle facilities, sidewalks. In other cases, there's no bicycle facility, and then in other cases there's no sidewalk. So up there you see, that might be around Hypoluxa Lantana. There's someone waiting at the bus stop, but there's just gravel along the way, and so. It's pretty shabby in some spots. So we want to try and connect those facilities. A lot of communities along the corridor, there's been like some studies done in their communities or some studies that are beginning, some folks that want to do studies of US 1. But we really want to bring everyone together and have them think of this as not just a street in their city, but as a street, a corridor that connects to many other communities. So kind of bring a unified vision. We want to create implementable plans. So out of this study, we're going to create a continuous plan view for the entire corridor where we have recommendations of visually this is what would fit within the right of way and what could be done. So after that will come the more in-depth design phase. And again, we want to connect pedestrian bicycle facilities and upgrade, expand transit service. So I mentioned that Route 1, the regular route, goes just to Palm Beach Gardens now, and Bolt goes to West Palm Beach. We want to expand that all the way to Jupiter, and we want to create corridor-based BRT. So what that means is that the buses would be branded differently. Right now, the Bolt looks the exact same as the rest of the routes, and there's the stops might be a pole in the ground. We want to create like enhanced stops and buses so that it's identifiable, this express bus service. And what's really exciting is that we're looking at community health, safety, and economic development, and we're doing a health impact assessment. This is the first time we do this, and this is a growing practice around the state and in the country. So MetroPlan Orlando has done a couple of these, and this looks at additional information that sometimes we might not look at in our regular transportation studies. So looking at chronic illness rates and some other, yes?
Yeah, sorry, you were mentioning that you were looking to enhance, I guess, existing or future I guess, palm trans stops along this corridor, making them more appealing than just having the pole and a lot of sun. That's a great idea. And I was wondering, because with the school district, I'm sure I could find a few areas along US 1 that we have stops as well. Mm-hmm. Our stops are fairly arbitrary. I mean, it's pretty much a patch of grass where we can get
the school bus stop. Mm-hmm.
Right. And where I can, part of what I do, I sit on the DRO for the county as well, where we look at areas where we can, you know, enhance and have proper bus shelters, 10 by 15 bus shelters, not so much easements like palm trees, but long story short, you think this corridor enhancement could include maybe some school bus stops? We try to keep them separate from palm trans stops just because of the different populations, but we do have a few buses, I'm quite sure, that run along here a little bit, and I think that'd be good too, because our stops are, we don't even have a pole. It's pretty much just wherever we can put the bus at that particular point.
In the scope of this study, because it's so large, we're really just focusing on palm trans service and creating BRT. So the enhanced bus stops would be for that BRT service, but that might be, you know, a separate effort to look at where school bus stops are through that.
Right.
But we have through our health impact assessment, we have Eric Stern as part of that work group committee too to help us provide data, because some of the things we're looking at will be, you know, along the corridor. Where are there schools? Where can we enhance? Where can we improve walking bike facilities? Because of the scope of the project that's so large, we're sticking for the bicycle and pedestrian improvements just within the right-of-way of US 1, because we're looking at 42 miles. So, but for the health impact assessment and for locating those BRT stops, we are looking at what destinations are around the corridor, and also with health impact assessment, looking at access to healthy foods, looking at chronic illness rates, economic development, and different factors that we would normally not look at. So we have three consultant teams. Kimley Horn is doing the bicycle pedestrian roadway analysis. Kittleson and Associates is doing leading the health impact assessment and the transit analysis. And then Treasure Coast Regional Planning Council is helping us with that coordination, reaching out for stakeholder interviews. So we're going to be doing stakeholder interviews along the whole corridor, as well as helping us to schedule charrettes and workshops along the corridor. So right now, we've done a little bit of preliminary research, and then we're kicking off the outreach, which is going to run through May all the way through October, with and then work on the final report, and then bring it back to everyone with an outreach event in next spring. So as I mentioned, it's crossing 14 communities. We've divided it into six sections, so we'll be doing workshops and charrettes in each of these sections in these communities. And we've looked at a few preliminary things through the health impact assessment. So an interesting point is that along this corridor, people walk, bike, take transit, and carpool, and work at home more than the county as a whole. So there's more activity along this corridor for the people that live along the corridor. Also, you see here the areas where households that don't have access to a vehicle, some concentrations of that in Lake Worth, West Palm Beach. We also looked at this corridor contains 13% of the county's residents and 19% of the county's jobs. So a lot of things happening along the corridor, a lot of people coming to the corridor every day, coming in and out, going along the corridor, and then a lot of people just living along it as well. So looking at demographics, where are the minority populations, concentrations, looking at social equity, so these are some of the preliminary things we're looking at. Income and poverty levels along the corridor. So some of these are facts from the health impact assessment so far. So these are some of the things that are gonna feed into this study. I mentioned transit. So 18 routes feed into this corridor right now, there's 8,600 daily riders along the corridor.
You might have said it already, but I apologize. How wide east-west do you go to define the corridor?
So for the roadway analysis, it's just within the right-of-way, which one thing that makes it good, this corridor, is that the entire corridor is owned by FDOT. So that's great because they're on board with, you know, complete streets too, and we're dealing with one owner. And then also that makes it attractive for a major priority project in the future because that's state funds on a state road. So, but for the actual plan view that we're going to create plans of the entire corridor for the 42 miles, it's just within the right-of-way. For these, this data is more census block around that goes beyond the quarter, but looking at maybe like a mile out or half a mile out, like this kind of data. We'll be looking at also identifying major destinations along the quarter, like if there's a college or something and it's 2 miles away, you know, just those are things that that are important.
Let's look at this week. Because the Coastal Link group, which is also coming, this information, if we go wide enough, would also be great to include in that study. I mean, it's great stuff you're doing. It's good information. I'm thinking all of us along this quarter can use this.
Mm-hmm. I'm halfway, like I still have a few slides, but I know you guys have a webinar right now, so I can come back later and continue this presentation if you want to dissect it.
Sure, that's fine.
Yeah, so I don't cut you guys, they have like, I think like one more minute to get started. Okay. So.
Yeah. How wide is the right-of-way?
It differs in different spots, so it just kind of depends. In some areas, there's 2 one-way pairs, like in Delray. And then in other areas, it's nearer.
Oh, that's
so it,
true.
And then, so it kind of differs throughout the quarter.
So we're gonna come back to item B for
Valerie.
Thank you.
Sure.
That's very interesting.
Okay.
Item C, we're going to skip, and then we're going to go right to item D. That's the Road Root Condition Tool webinar. It starts at 10 a.m., so we wanted to make sure that we were on time.
In case we do need to amend the agenda.
Okay.
If anyone...
that compiles a slew of data sets for roadway segments and compiles that data and runs functions on that data to try to make better decisions for transportation planners, community planners, and the sort. So let's get started here. Just a little bit about the Eastern Florida Regional Plan Council. We have 7 counties and 75 towns and cities in our jurisdiction. You can see that large swath of land. It's very diverse. We have the Kennedy Space Center, Port Canaveral.
I'm sorry, say that again. Okay, we need a motion to amend the agenda. It's to come back to item B and move D up and put C below D.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
Okay.
Who started the motion?
Thanks for being flexible.
Thank you.
Okay, solutions for transportation. So just a few of the things that we do in general. All of our work can basically be utilized with the route condition tool in terms of, you know, we can embed the route condition tool into our projects. But really, a lot of our work is revolved around community planning. We work with the Housing and Urban and Development. We do medical arts districts. We do a lot of just peer planning, if you want to use that term. We also do a lot of transportation planning and corridor analysis, which is exactly what this is getting into. And on the right-hand side there, you do see a preview of what we'll be going over today, the route condition tool. And on the left, you see a corridor study that we did, which we used a micro-level route condition for. We built it for the corridor in that circumstance. We also do economic development. I drive in Orlando. We look at food. So really, when you think about it, it's not too much of a stretch to say that transportation actually does have a strong foothold in the world of economic development. So that's very important for this presentation as well. We also do community health analysis, HIAs, which many of you know, health impact assessments. Your transportation network is a vital piece of the overall health of your community. If you're able to walk around and if your transportation networks connect recreational areas with places of business, then you can naturally live a more healthy lifestyle. So we do a lot of work in that realm. We also do urban design. As you can see here, we've got a kind of a plethora of design, but that is really the end product, in my opinion, of really every type of planning kind of all culminates in the urban design side, because that's where you're able to kind of put all your ideas on paper, and specifically that means putting the street section that you redesigned and that you're really excited about on paper and designing land uses around it. That's really what is fun for me, at least. We also do emergency management and resiliency, so we look at which transportations will be impacted by hurricanes or that could potentially be impacted by sea level rise. and things like that. As you can see, we actually work with the University of Florida GeoPlan Center to get sea level rise data and cross-reference our data sets with that. So you can see that we really, we work with transportation database or transportation data across a number of different segments of the planning spectrum. Okay, so what's happening in East Central Florida, or really the Orlando-Daytona region, let's call it, but what's happening here? Well, as I got to earlier, we are seeing explosive population growth, and I mean in the 2-4% range. We're talking about, you know, 20-30% in a decade or more. This is huge growth that we're experiencing. And two transportation infrastructure projects in particular that we have to get to at the very beginning are SunRail and I-4 Ultimate. SunRail is a commuter rail system that is basically a north-south spine that was built, and I-4 Ultimate is a huge makeover of I-4 that will add lanes, will add slip lanes in the middle, so there's a lot of stuff going on in Orlando right now. I'm sure a lot of you are familiar with Dangerous by Design, the study that basically ranks metro areas based off of their danger index for bicyclists and pedestrians. On the right side of the screen here, you'll see a map series I came up with. Every time a parcel is built, it basically turns yellow, and that's from year 1900 to 2016. And you'll see that Orlando and our region is just growing outward, outward, and outward. And as that happens, the densities generally go lower and lower and lower. Now, I say that because if you take what's on the left here and you compare it to the next slide, you'll see that on the far right corner, the cities that have the lowest population densities generally tend to be the cities on the higher end of the pedestrian danger index and bicyclist danger index. The far right corner there, or the far right column there, basically says, okay, if your danger rank is 1, and you subtract from that your density rank, which is 29 for Orlando, you've got a negative 28. So really, that's showing that it's largely a function of our land development patterns. Now, this is kind of a planner versus engineer world. I know that kind of sounds harsh, I guess, but that's really what we want to do at the Planning Council is bring all the groups together at the table. And we really see two completely different outcomes here. The same general volume for a roadway can be achieved in multiple different ways. And obviously, as transportation planning is going into the next century and evolving, we're seeing multiple uses really come back into play as since 1950s and on. It's really been the automobile that has been the primary source of transportation growth. So with all this happening in our region, it really comes down to a very simple premise for us at the Regional Planning Council. We have a responsibility to make our streets safer. And it is our job to compile data and do whatever it is that we can do to make sure that to ensure that we actually see results. So in 2012, the Regional Planning Council launched its Safe Routes program. And on the next slide here, you'll see this is our database, our website. Basically, on this website, you've got a toolbox where you have statistics for school planners in terms of average busing, average bus occupancy, what the total cost is for transportation in different school districts. Outside of schools, we also have a lot of interactive mapping services where you can look at the route condition tool, which we'll get to, but also, you know, things such as transit stops and the locations of a lot of different data that we've put together as part of this website. Right? Now, and really that's what creating this portal was compiling studies, compiling data, and a lot of that data was GIS data. So by the time we were done building this website portal in 2012, we had a lot of transportation data. But we needed to take to the next step, and we knew we had to somehow synthesize that data to give us a better view of what was going on overall in our region in terms of where bicycle and pedestrian crashes happening, why are they happening there, what's present there, and how can we aggregate data to find out the correct solution for that location. And our big idea was this: hey, let's compile all roadway data into one GIS database, which means that for one segment, you've got multiple layers of information, somewhat like a parcel database. So here it is. We're ready to get going on the route condition tool. As you can see, we have built the route condition tool for Volusia County, for Lake County, and for Osceola County in our regions. What you're viewing right now is actually the proximity score for these roadways. The greener, the better. But basically, we run functions on every segment of roadway, not only of the roadway characteristics, but what are those roadways close to. So the green cores you see here are those really important roadways. So, what is it? As I said, it's a compilation of transportation data in a GIS shapefile. So, generally right now what you have is one GIS shapefile or file on a map. If you're not familiar with GIS, we'll just have one attribute, such as the speed limits or the annual average daily traffic. Well, what the route condition tool does is we compile all these 20 to 30 attributes across, kind of like a parcel data set. So you've got everything in one table in that, and so that you can aggregate variables and run functions on those on that data. So the first step, obviously, compiling the data. And the man hours, or the, I'm sorry, the human hours that go into building this database are, well, let's put it this way. I built Osceola County in about 2.5 months of 90% purely of my time. So it's not a huge financial undertaking to complete the database. However, it's a mental strategy to learn how to get through it because, you know, you're cutting data, you're looking at aerials. I kind of like to refer to it as the most appropriate in the world because you're just going down roads and looking at lanes. But the exciting thing about it, and you always keep it in your mind as you're building this database, is what is the end product going to be? And that's where the next three lines, the scores come into play. So basically, we compile this data, and then we score each roadway segment on a 1 to 10 for safety and proximity. And I'm going to get into exactly how we do that. Say the speed limit is extremely high on a road, it's really wide, that road is going to get a lower safety score. However, it's going to get a higher proximity score if it's close to things such as schools, parks, high population centers, commercial areas, transit stations, and things like that. So we score each roadway on a 1 to 10 for safety and proximity. Now, that is where the most important element comes in, which is the disparity. The disparity takes our 1 to 10 safety score for each roadway and our 1 to 10 proximity score, and it basically compares them. And we're able to find roadways that are in extremely important locations that have perhaps less than safe characteristics. So that's our disparity score. We're actually going to go through those in map form so you can kind of understand it spatially, what we're doing. The most important thing I'd say after that fact is the fact that for Osceola County, when we built this database, we were able to cross-reference all Public Works maintained database information into the route condition tool database. So we basically had a unique identifying number that was able to tie our route condition tool in with the Public Works database. So everything that their Public Works department does on a daily basis can be rolled into the route condition tool, and they can now finally marry their pure engineering data with this more kind of planning proximity data. And that's what I was getting to earlier, is this tool allows diverse know, skill sets to really be in the same room, kind of the artsy versus the mathy kind of side, and bringing those A and Bs together to get a full view of what's going on. And we're, the next part, we'll get to this a little later, but we also cross-reference the database, the roadway segments, and the route condition tool with emergency management data, such as where the evacuation routes are, which hurricane zones each roadway segment is in, and other things like that. Now, this is a visual representation to show just the amount of kind of segmentation that goes into this. Generally, a county database will, one roadway segment will go from one intersection to the other. Well, this really pares it down further than that. So as you can see on the top row, the speed limit is 30, and that's a cut in its own. But then once you add the sidewalks at ADT and road width, what you get on the bottom are a ton of just unique roadway segments that have their own unique set of variables. And again, that's where the power comes with the route condition tool. Now, for the GIS people in the audience, this is a picture of part of the attribute table, probably about, I'd say, one-third or one-fourth of it. But you can just see kind of how, really how detailed this thing is. We've got a number of through lanes, turn lanes, and total lanes, which is completely new. I've never actually seen that in a database in Orlando before. Maybe I haven't been looking in the right place, but it's really good to get a sense of the number of turn lanes and comparing the total number of lanes to AADT and creating aggregate variables, which we'll get to in the future. But this just kind of shows the level of detail that goes into creating this data. And it's mainly from FDOT RCI files. We're able to compile those. However, I do have to say that when we compile the data, we always check the source data because your data set is only as good as the source data that goes into it. So we've actually found a few issues with the FDOT median types file and a few other files. They're not 100% correct. So the good thing is while we're creating this massive transportation database, we're able to actually find where the source data is incorrect. That's very important because we want this to be as accurate as possible so that its implications are as real world as possible. Now, before, let's take a step back. I told you about the three things that we do with this data after we build it. We give it a 1 to 10 safety score, we give it a 1 to 10 proximity score, and then we give it a disparity score. Well, what you're looking at right now is the safety score for the roadways in Osceola County. One thing you'll notice is the majority of roadways in every county are two-lane, 25 to 30 mile an hour in walled neighborhoods. So those are really the outliers that you don't really need to focus on as much. It's really, once you get about 5 to 10,000 annual average daily traffic figures, that's where you really start to hone in, but we do build this database for every single roadway, so you'll see a lot of tens in there, a lot of very small, very dark, hopefully you can see it tens. But this is the safety score, and basically reds and purples are bad, greens are good. Now, the next thing I'm going to show you is the proximity score. As you can see, we take proximity to transit stops, to schools, the five different things, residential, commercial, and recreational areas, and you can see that there are definitely some very important roadways in there that are close to a lot of different things simultaneously. So I'm going to take you back to the safety score, and then I'm going to now show you what you just saw, the proximity score. And now I'm going to show you the disparity score, which is where you compare those two scores, and here it is. Now, one thing you will notice here, a lot of the disparity score kind of fallout is on major roadways, such as Vine Street, 441. However, we compare down the data to certain annual average daily traffic thresholds, and we can really isolate variables to see the disparity disparity in the way that we want to see it. Again, the raw condition tool is an extremely flexible database. So even something like the disparity score, we can even manipulate that. But this is the overall disparity score, and you really see some areas in the county. I'm trying to get this this pointer to work. Yeah, you can really see some areas here in the county that really have some issues. And this is where our medical arts district was planned, where I'm circling right now. So that's actually pretty cool that one of our major outlier roadways is in a district that we're looking into community planning for, which is very exciting for us and for the city of Kissimmee, definitely. Here are our attributes. I just kind of wanted to list them out, but you can see we've got a lot of them. We've got, the three lane types, the three lanes, turn lanes, and total lanes, speed limits, AADT and truck AADT. As I said earlier, we're able to aggregate variables now, so now we can have annual average daily traffic per lane, which is a completely new variable from my perspective, and kind of looking at intersections is really cool when you're looking at AADT per lane. Inside shoulder width, surface types, pavement conditions. And on the bottom, you'll see some of the data that the Public Works Department at Osceola County is able to cross-reference in the database. There are so many. I really just included the very important ones here, like the surface type, the last repair date. And we're going to get, at the end of this presentation, to applications, and I'm kind of itching to really get to some of them, but I want to take this as methodically as possible. But there are a lot of applications that can be completed when you use the Public Works data with the pure planning data, and I'm sure your brains are kind of going off right now and kind of leading you to what I mean. So I want to get into the kind of the meat and potatoes about the scoring, because it's very, very important. How do we do this? Well, we use the Federal Highway Authority's roadway safety countermeasures to give the 1 to 10 scores. So basically what we did, and I'm going to go to the next slide and then come back. For each of the categories, we gave one of these weights. So basically every attribute such as sidewalks, traffic signals, page shoulders, whatever we felt relevant to those five FHWA categories, we were able to weight the variable, and then based on what the variable was showing, whether there was lighting or no lighting, or whether there were page shoulders or no page shoulders, what the sidewalk coverage was, we score that on a negative 100 to 100, and we're able to basically come up with a nominal score for each roadway that we then convert to a 1 to 10. So I wanted to show you that, and then go back. So you can see the five categories down below: reduce speed of motor vehicles, reduce volume of motor vehicles, reduce exposure, improve access and mobility, and improve safety. So for each one of those five principles, we created a scoring metric. Now, our 1 to 10 safety score that you saw at the end is the average of all of those scores. So it's the cumulative safety score for the roadway. Now, probably the most important question you have right now in your head is, how did we come up with these scores? Well, we had a lot of arguments. Let's say, we had a great technical advisory committee that came to the Regional Planning Council's offices. MetroPlan was a big help. MetroPlan, if you're not familiar, is the transportation planning organization for Orlando, or Orange County, Osceola County, and Seminole County. So we had a lot of people in the room going back and forth in terms of how we should weight these variables and the like, and what we'll get to at the end is really we're starting to do a regression. But this is the first kind of attempt at scoring, is we had all these people in the room and helping us out, and it really was a great process, and we were able to basically convert what we're seeing on the road to scores, as you see on the bottom here, the raw values convert to scores. Um, Now, this is also very important. What determines the scores? I'm going to give you a very specific example. If you look at the fatality risk for bicycles and pedestrians by speed. Now, on the bottom there, you'll see the speed on the bottom row, and then on the left, you'll see the fatality risk. You'll see that in between about 30 to 40 miles an hour, the death rate for pedestrians just skyrockets. I believe 35 is really the number where you start to see the increase. I believe from 30 to 35 to 40 miles an hour, the death rate goes from 10% to 50% to 90%, somewhere along those lines. So that's represented in our scoring, and we were looking at this data when we were not only weighting the variables for the safety scores, but determining how low of a value the roadway would get. So once the roadway gets into 35 to 40 miles an hour, you see a drastic reduction in score. So basically everything that we're doing is based off of observed statistics. We're really taking that to the next level now, but that's the last two slides of the presentation. I also have a bell curve on here because, as I said, we weight the variables and we give them scores on a negative 100 to 100, but we convert those into 1 to 10 scores, and we really like to have a good kind of standard deviation-based thing going on where about 68% of our records will be scoring in the very middle. I believe it's 4s, 5s, 6s, and 7s. And then the 8s, 9s, and 10s, and the 1, 2s, and 3s are the good and bad outliers, respectively. So most of the records will fall in the middle of the scoring. And the 1 to 10 scores are based off of the overall scoring output. So it takes the actual scores of the roads and creates a model based off of that. Now, to show the results of our scoring and what it actually means, again, this is now being taken to the next level, but in terms of the first way that we were able to score the roads, we did see an increase in crash incidents. So these scores really do have value in terms of the noted crash incidents. As you can see, a score of a 1, there was 1 out of 500th of every mile of roadway in the county, but it accounted for about 2% of the crashes. So very high crash incidents on the roads that scored the lowest. And I was very happy to see that as the score goes down, the crash incidents goes up consistently. So there's no number, there's no 6 that's higher than a 5, or there's no 5 that's higher than a 6. You know, it goes uniform down, and every time the score goes up, the crash incidence goes down. Very happy to see that. So basically, this is where I was before. This is kind of the proximity side of that. I apologize for that. We're now going from safety into proximity. I'm talking very quickly. But the proximity score is done this way. So proximity to schools is 40% of the score, and then 15%, and this actually doesn't give you the full information. The proximity to populations, oh yeah, it's based on the population density. So it gets a higher score with better values. So if you're within a quarter mile of a school, you get 100 points, and things like that. Now, the public works cross-reference. This is really one of the most important things, as I said, because we need to make this workable for the county. When I presented this, the public works, one of their senior engineers said, I love the idea, I love it, okay? But once it's done and it's on my desk, how can I use it, right? So really, from the very beginning with Osceola County, we were getting into kind of a pre-application type thing. How is this going to be used? And the first step there is linking their tables. I mean, this is so important because now they have a whole new world that they can connect everything that they've been doing for a decade or more. They now have a whole new world that they can join that data to. It's a whole new data world, I guess you could say. So as I was saying earlier, we have common ID, unique ID numbers, and Osceola County maintains their side of the database, and it allows live workflows to be joined. Public Works and Planning can coordinate data directly with this system, and Public Works Works and Planning have really reshuffled their standard operations. Now they've actually completely reshuffled a few teams, and now planning and engineering are working very closely together, even more so than before. Now that they have this data, and I believe they're doing some other internal kind of reshuffling anyway, but this really came at the perfect time for the database. Well, in Palm Beach MPO, power live workflows joined to the tool at any time. Well, basically, they're building an application for that. However, in GIS, it's just in terms of a join and relate, you can at any time, if a member of their public works team has an ArcGIS server, they can pull up their out condition tool, and then, I'm not sure if you're how familiar you are with GIS specifically, but they can then do a join and join in their live public works data in with the database. So we also update the raw condition tool database every month or two. So really, the data that they're maintaining is extremely live, and it can be cross-referenced. But really, it's us holding them up, if anything, because they're the live data. We have to do updates every month or so. So for them, it's very easy to be able to cross-reference it to the live and most recent database that we have sent to them. Another very important thing, we got to this earlier, but now we're going to do it more in depth, is doing geospatial cross-references to identify the roadways that are within certain hurricane evacuation, sea level rise, or flood zones. So when you think about the disparity scores and the safety scores, this really adds another dimension to that, because you can now say, okay, this roadway is in a very important location. It has variables that observed statistics show that are dangerous, and it's within the hurricane evacuation zone for a Category 1 hurricane. That's the kind of two or three birds with one stone solution that you're looking for. If you do a fix on this roadway, whether it's mitigated in terms of stormwater or restriping, you can solve multiple problems at one time. And that's really the important part here, is solving multiple problems at one time. As I was just saying, it allows us to see diverse linked data sets with one view. So we're able to see multiple facets all at once. We're able to union all of those data prerogatives that we have into one. And that's why we're now building a lot of applications for it. And as I'm presenting this, you guys, you know, you've got to understand that it's extremely new. This stuff is about 1 to 2 months the shelf. We created Volusia and Lake County's data sets as kind of the version 1.0, but that did not have nearly the amount of variables that version 2.0 has that we just released for Osceola County. So a lot of the applications that you're seeing in this presentation are extremely new. They're happening right now. And very excitingly, a lot of the research that you'll see at the tail end of this presentation in terms of where crashes occur is a month or about a week or two old. So this is all happening right now, and that's why we're really excited to be presenting it to you right now, because we're really in a whirlwind of finding out a lot. So now I'm going to get into some applications. Actually, let me read. For the Palm Beach commenter, yes, basically the question was, so they maintain in their own environment and you go get a snapshot each month. Well, the public works department, all of their engineers are always updating their database in terms of roads that are being improved and all that. And that's an Excel file. And that Excel file, or it's really an access table, but those access tables have unique identification numbers that correspond with a roadway segment. Those unique identifying numbers match numbers that are in the route condition tool database, So they're able to, at any time, join their live Public Works database as of 2 minutes ago, let's say. Let's say they just made a change about 2 minutes ago to their database. They can then GIS, open it in a map viewer, and join that new data with the most recent version of the route condition tool that's on their system. And we send them a new route condition tool. It's been about 2 months, two or 3 months now since the final deliverable, and since then we've actually sent them two updates. So right now it's about once every month and a half. But the very important thing is, they do a lot of this stuff just on their own, and they're able to join what they're doing very easily with a join. Now, let's talk about the mapping, because the mapping in general is one of the more basic, but one of the really cool functions about the route condition tool. I hope the colors come through, because I do use a spectrum. I really like to use the green, yellow, orange, red, purple deal, so I hope the colors are coming through for you guys. The aerial view of this tool is very powerful. You're able to see a lot at once. And it's extremely accurate data, and as we're going through these maps, you'll see the high level of segmentation to the data. So what you're looking at right now is the total number of lanes. This isn't the number of through lanes. This is the through lanes plus the turn lanes, which is not in many transportation databases, at least that I've seen. I may be wrong there, but at least in my locality, I really haven't seen that much data that takes that extra lane into account. That's very important data that we need. So now here's a zoom in of that data, and here you can really see the segmentation. You can see where there's turn lanes. There's actually a turn lanes map coming up, but you can see the high level of segmentation that comes with these maps. Now, one of the things that Osceola County is very excited about is utilizing these general maps for grant applications or for Safe Routes to School projects, and really showing the grantees or these grant the people who make these grantors that they have their ducks in a row and that they have the data in line so that they can say, okay, I want to do this grant. Now look at all the data we've compiled. We want to do something with this. So it really gives them a leg up and it gives them leverage because it looks like you really have your ducks in a row when you've got a diverse set of transportation data just at your fingertips. And really, the atlases are really important because you can create an atlas, as many of you GIS users know, and you can basically print out the whole county in grids and have the entire county mapped out for all your transportation needs. You can look at it at any time. What's the speed of this roadway? How wide is it? What type of median does it have? All that stuff. So let's just keep going through these. The number of turn lanes, I'm going to zoom in here. So now you can see, I'm going to use the arrow pointer. You can see here the number of turn lanes, so none, there's no color. Mostly one turn lanes, but you can see in a lot of these intersections, there's a lot of craziness going on. So once again, I mean, just think about this view in general. You can see that this intersection, most of that traffic is coming from the south. Same thing here. You can see... and if you compare this with daily traffic counts or congestion, you really start to get the full story. Median types, this is also very important. The analytics for median types at the end of this presentation are very, very important. We were able to cross-reference bicycle and pedestrian cross locations based on the median type, and we found something huge. Okay, we found that grass medians are way safer than paved medians, and that's when you... really control every other road variable. We'll get to that, but this is a very important map because we're finding very, very important things in terms of comparing paved medians with grass medians. And then here is sidewalk coverage. Green is on both sides of the road, red is no sidewalks, and yellow is on one side of the road. So basically, for sidewalk coverage and our safety score, you can see that we'll have three potential scores. Are there no sidewalks? Are there sidewalks on one side, or are there sidewalks on both sides? We also, in addition to this, have the actual sidewalk file that shows the real location of it, so it's not centerline based. So that's good to view alongside jobs at the route condition tool, and especially when you're doing it with schools. I know the reds aren't popping up very well for you, because I'm having that issue, and my computer generally has really good contrast, so I'm sorry if you can't really see the reds. They probably look like empty spaces, but when you see those around schools, it's really not a good deal. It's not a good deal at all. This is very important because this is the pavement condition index for the county-maintained roads. Osceola County, they can basically clear out the roads that they don't maintain. So all the gray roads here are roadways that they don't maintain. They're only in this view looking at the pavement condition index for their roadways. So they're able to say, okay, I only want to look at the roadways that we maintain. And that's very, very good for them. So you can see there's some lower scores in here. There's a lot of stuff going on. And we have a specific application coming up in terms of trending the PCI data and coming up with a potential year for repaving and then restriping when that happens. But we'll get to that application very soon. Just going through these maps. Here's one of our aggregated variables that we don't have for all of the roadways. Because a lot of the neighborhood roadways, we give a default value of either less than 2,000 annual average daily traffic or less than 5,000 annual average daily traffic. And it's in the methodology where we differentiate there. But for all of the roadways where we got either traffic counts from FDOT or from portable monitoring traffic devices, I believe I got that right, we were able to add in the FDOT or the AADT data. So you can see when you divide it by the number of lanes, you get a completely new view of some of your intersections and what's going on. We looked at the number of turn lanes earlier, and that's really important to kind of see where there may be congestion that pure AADT numbers aren't giving you the full story. Maybe you need to compare that AADT with other data sets. Once again, I actually think I already showed you this map, so let's keep going. Now, let's get into the first application that we completed with the route condition tool, and it was in Lake County. I'm sure most of you are familiar with Gabby's Law, the Florida statute that it defines either crossings on roadways or parallel conditions on roadways that classify as hazardous walking conditions. And a hazardous walking condition is an area that the state deems safe for a student within a 2-mile walk zone to get to school. So if there's a hazardous condition, the state has to bus the kids within the 2 miles that would have to face a hazardous condition on the way to school. So this is not only a danger issue, it's also a financial issue, because when we've got hazardous conditions, we're busing a lot of kids within the 2-mile radius of the schools that if we just would have given them a safe transportation infrastructure, we wouldn't have to pay that, you know, $700 to $950 per student per year for busing, you know, every year. So for every student you can take off of hazardous walking conditions, you save a lot of money. And hopefully, and it's not, obviously, we're talking about kids here, it's not a pure monetary issue. You're also giving them a safe walk to school, which is something that's been lost. It's something I actually never did because I grew up in the Dr. Phillips area of Orlando. And we didn't really walk to school that much. But basically, this application, what we did, was we looked at all of the new criteria for Gabby's Law. Okay, they changed what hazardous walking conditions are. Okay, they changed what goes into them. So we built an algorithm that said, okay, let's read the law. Is the road 30 miles an hour? Yes. Okay. Go to 30 miles an hour or greater. Yes. Okay. Go to the next step. So we took every roadway through a step-by-step-by-step-by-step process. And every time a roadway didn't qualify as a hazardous condition, we took it out of the database. So we started with about 25,000 roadway segments, and we pared it down to about 80 roadway segments that we did a ground-level QA on, and we were actually able to find 2 new hazardous roadway conditions in the county, but we didn't know from the aerial view that those had been planned to be mitigated ahead of time. We also found 3 hazardous walking conditions that don't exist yet, but they will exist if development occurs within specific areas of the county. So we can actually see if development occurs on this parcel, will a hazardous walking condition be created in the future? And that's actually something very kind of important because you can start to think, you know, impact fees are one thing, but, you know, what about busing fees for some of these communities? Some of these communities go in and they create this need for busing when really, you know, they're within the 2 mile walking radius. Now, we kind of got into this a little bit, and that's the advanced variables. The AADT per lane, the percentage truck traffic, when you take the truck AADT and you divide it by the total AADT, the level of constraint, that's actually a variable that we don't have yet, but it's one that I really want to build, and that would be the total right-of-way minus the curb-to-curb or edge-to-edge roadway width, so you can see how much space you have outside of that roadway. And then bike slots and turn lanes and a lot of different stuff that you can create and aggregate variables where you can compare or combine two variables into one and then see what crashes, where crashes are occurring in terms of what those variables are. Now, this is very important, very, very, very important. And we have a really good relationship with all of our MPOs and TPOs, and we believe this could have a huge effect on priority project listings. Because we think about the safety score and the proximity score, you've got location and you've got how the road is built, right? I mean, those are two really important pieces of information. So we're thinking about, you know, ways of how we can work with our TPOs and MPOs, of which we overlap geographically, how we can work this into their priority projects, so that we, and not implying that there's a level of bias right now, but to absolutely remove any shadow of a doubt that it's not a purely mathematical function that makes sense and that takes community planning aspects into context, not everything. So really, the next slide is really where we're going to get there. And this is the big one.
If it's okay with everyone, we're going to transition out of the webinar and get back to the meeting.
That's okay.
You sure?
Just brief comments. So, you know, I really thought the webinar was going to be about kind of creating a minimum grid for bike head networks. It's really, seems like it combined the idea of what we were doing with our bike suitability mapping and the safety plan that we've done. So we're doing some of the efforts that he mentioned in the background, hazardous walking school conditions, not so much the emergency management or public works, but I think there is some value to the tool that he was discussing. But as Heather kind of mentioned, he geeked out a little bit. So he's really in depth about the mapping and attributes and all that, which is great information, but I think we need to pull it back. So thanks for your patience in that, and I think we're going to go ahead and transition back to where Valerie picked off with the...
But you know what? It was good. Grass medians are safer than concrete.
Yeah, that was good. I wonder why. I wrote that down too.
Yeah. Because here's what I've been thinking about since I said it. I think because grass medians tend to be wider because you can't have grass in really tight spaces, and it literally gives a person a place to stop.
That makes sense. Yeah, okay. Because I was thinking, I was like, what are the talking about?
I like things like that. Like, you could know
Findings,
that.
Yes.
Yes.
Don't take it to task, though. I mean, for what I heard in that presentation, I'm not so sure that there's technical merits behind what everything that he had stated. So you're going to run away with something that you saw in a presentation, and, you know, grass medians are, you know, just be careful.
Okay. Yeah, because you don't know any of the parameters on why he said that.
He even mentioned that you can manipulate the variables.
Yes.
Those were his words.
Yeah.
All right, so we left off talking about transit. It's a busy corridor, and actually half of the transit, or the riders right now, are transit dependent, so improving service and improving those connections will really help those currently, but also future writers. So we're also looking at some, for example, where these facilities are missing. So here you see where there's bicycle facilities missing along the corridor, and then also sidewalks is the green line. So some in Lantana, Hypoluxa, north of Boynton Beach are missing sidewalks, and then we have some missing bicycle facilities in the middle of the corridor, which is unfortunate because, as we saw in the previous slides, those are the areas with the most people that don't have a car and don't, you know, that have lower income. So here's a picture of actually a really nice bicycle facility in, this is in Hypoluxa through Boynton, the north part of Boynton, but so it's a buffer bicycle facility on the west side, but then there's no sidewalks. So, and then this is the new bike lane in downtown West Palm Beach, and then in Delray Beach there. So looking at all those things, also looking at bicycle pedestrian crashes and fatalities, so some of that information from the bicycle pedestrian safety plan that was recently completed. Again, you see some of these things happening here where we don't have, where we're missing some facilities. So a lot happening along the corridor, but these are some of the things that are being analyzed through this study. So next steps we have, we're kicking off the public outreach. Have informational booths with some of our transportation partners this Saturday at Sanborn Square in Boca Raton. There's a yoga class from 9 to 10, so we're hoping to capture some of those people after, but we promised the instructor we wouldn't distract, wouldn't be tapping people on their shoulder while they're downward dog or anything. But we'll be there with informational booths on about the project, posters, fact sheets, and things like that. And then we're starting these charrettes and interviews process. So as I mentioned, we divided the corridor into six sections, so if you're one of these communities, we'll be coming to you soon. Or if you're already in Boca Raton, we're there now, so there's stakeholder interviews happening now, like Mayor Haney, city staff, different elected officials are being interviewed. And then also, during the charrette, we're going to have open studio time, so it'll be, anyone can stop in, provide input, learn about it, and have that, those one-on-ones while we're there. So this is the schedule, and I mentioned the charrette, so we're having next weekend, not this weekend, will be the workshop in Boca Raton for that section. So again, anyone's welcome to join us, and we're going to have a presentation about, more in-depth presentation about the project, about the findings so far, and then we're going to do a brief walking tour of US-1, come back and do an exercise to talk through some of these the findings and things that could be improved. And then the open studio charrette I mentioned is Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday. All of this is at the Boca Raton Community Center. And then on the last day, and they'll be different, they'll be doing design, and it's like hands-on working different stations, and then you can stop by and provide input, see how's it going. And then on the last day, at 4 p.m. on the last day, there'll be a final working presentation of a summary of all the findings from all of this activity, from the input, stakeholder interviews, and the workshop. So if you can't make it to anything else, then that would be an interesting presentation if you're interested in US-1 in Boca Raton. So wanted to let you know about that. And then next up is make sure to stay tuned and get involved. We have a website. It's really cool because it has a comment map that you can go onto the map and go to US-1 and drop a pin anywhere and provide a comment like this. This area is really bad, or this should be improved, XYZ. So please provide your comments there. And then we have more information. We'll be posting the other charrette flyers and all that there. We also have a project Facebook page where we're promoting, posting this information. So please follow us. We have Instagram, and that's kind of one to let you know we're just getting started with all this. So we look forward to your participation and your input. So that was kind of it. We're coordinating with the city of West Palm Beach too, because they're doing a mobility study and coordinating with the different efforts along the way. So.
Thank you. Do you have the dates for section two?
Yeah. We have the dates, but not yet the location. So Dana Little with Treasure Coast Regional Planning Council said he's reaching out to that section to see like where that charrette and workshop can who can host us. And then but it's the off the top of my head, it's on the website, but it should be like the third weekend or the last weekend in June, so near the end of June. But prior to each, so each month for the next 6 months, next time we have meetings, we'll have the flyers for that month's charrette. But they'll be usually towards the end of the month.
As a general comment, just a thought, that in doing all the analysis that you did about the demographics and the history of US 1 is really critically important to its character and its land uses and its function. Mm-hmm. And it would be good to include a really thorough historical analysis of the Boston Post Road and what it meant and what it does throughout its corridor, because that's part of why it looks the way it looks and the kinds of uses that developed around it and what the opportunities are on either side in terms of density, job opportunities, transit. So as part of the background, in addition to demographics, could you flesh that part out a little bit?
I can talk. We didn't really include the history of US 1 in the work order with the consultants, but through the stakeholder interviews, and we'll make sure to interview too that you as well to kind of get that input and that feedback from the history. But
there is a book about it. I have it on my shelf. I can't remember the author. But it was the motel route. It is often the automobile sales capital of the entire country throughout the entire route from Boston, even down through Delray. So there's a lot of stuff about how it developed and why and where it ran that probably plays a critical role, half dependent role on where it is today, that I think would be an interesting thing to incorporate.
I love that idea, and I think that maybe transferring that into what is the view of it in the future, kind of in the important transportation investments that will be a part of this and how it will change, and so kind of that chronological history would be helpful for you.
Well, even sepia photos,
Yeah, and then the past to the present and kind of where we're at now.
Yeah, and if you guys have any, resources, we're really looking for data right now, especially we're waiting still from some partners we haven't gotten data from. So especially with the socioeconomic and all that stuff, health data, so we're reaching out. So if you guys have any photos or things that you want to share, then that'd be great.
Just another random thought to coordinate with that.
Comment too. Mm-hmm.
Okay. In terms of your bus rapid transit, again, we have to think of the last mile. Once you get there, how do you get to your destination?
Yeah.
And in West Palm, I know that there's some bike share. We're in Delray, we're trying to get our bike share.
Mm-hmm.
But if there can be some coordinated effort along that corridor to do the bike share, then that rapid transit really becomes more viable.
Exactly.
Otherwise, you end up just in front of a plaza someplace.
Exactly. And that is being looked at through the transit analysis, is even though we're not going to, because it's outside of the scope of the project, create plans for the entire corridor or a mile out, that last mile, we're looking at those destinations and what's around, if there's bike share, what are the destinations along it. So there may be recommendations, there needs to be these improvements, but we're not doing the design of a buffer around the entire corridor just because it's way
outside.
Well,
I'm not saying around the entire corridor. I'm saying at the stop,
yeah.
At the modal stop, you have to have a modal transfer.
Mm-hmm.
Right there.
Yeah.
If there's bike share half a mile away, that doesn't do you any good. You don't want to walk that half mile in July at 3 o'clock when it's raining. You want the bike share to be coordinated directly with your modal transportation.
Yeah. And so the BRT, that's usually something that is part of that. So right now it's the very high level of this is a vision for BRT, and the stations would have bike share and they'd have this and that. The next step after this, so we have the funding plan for the design, the more in-depth design after this, and then after that, the idea would be that we get funding from the state to actually implement the construction of the improvements. The transit, however, is a little more complicated, so we're creating where would it make sense to make these stops, what would it look like, what would it contain, bike share, whatever, what would the schedule be like, but the next step is for PalmTran to do the more in-depth study and then apply to FTA for grants, because we can't pay for operations, but we're trying to help them, and including transit in this complete streets discussion, not just focusing on bike ped, but actually those connections with transit and where would it make sense. And
if it's okay to mention, we've also been doing some research on countywide bike share. We've talked to Skybike and also B-Cycle down in Broward to see what their model was for countywide bike share, so we're trying to investigate what are the steps for that. It seems from the Broward model, at least, that impetus came from
I think it came from their transit department as a function of their county government. So we're thinking about what are the avenues here.
You and then you, because I know you've had your hand up for a while.
Oh, go ahead, because I've...
I just want to say I think this is a great idea. There's very little continuity on one from north to south, but it seems like right away is going to be the big issue. Is it going to be? Do you think they're potentially going to try to acquire additional right away to make this vision come true?
I'm not sure. It may be a recommendation, like, for example, in Lantana, where there's that missing sidewalk on the west side. That was like a resurfacing project that's coming up, and we reached out to the project manager and said, hey, this is an opportunity. You're resurfacing. Can we find a way to find a sidewalk? An option would have been to do a lane elimination where you go from 4 to 3 because they didn't have that much traffic volume in the center turn lane, but they weren't really too on board with that idea because they're worried about in the future they might get more traffic. So the other alternative is DOT's in discussions with the FEC about getting an easement and paying rent basically to be able to do a sidewalk to connect those bus stops on that west side. So some of the recommendations that may come out of this, you know, that might be something that comes out of it. We're trying to fit the recommendations within the right-of-way so that it's, you know, kind of like ready to implement after and go into the next stages. But I think there will be opportunities in some areas. The lanes might be wide enough that we can narrow it down a little, or there might be a shoulder and we're just missing something. So we'll be looking at all of that throughout the course.
So they're pretty much going to work with the existing right away,
yeah.
And maybe get a little bit of railroad.
If there's no other alternative, then, you know, there might be recommendations throughout.
Okay.
The corridor is built up to mostly built up. Are you guys looking at zoning and land use and then potential redevelopment? Because I know there's some mobile home parks and things along there which could convert high density residential.
We're not really, we're like looking at what's around, but we're not doing land use and all that analysis just because it's beyond our scope. But it might lead into additional studies from this study. A city might be like, hey, we want to do like a study around here with a more in-depth land use and redevelopment plan. So we're going to like look at it, but we're not going into depth with recommendations and, hey, you guys should rezone over here and do this, that. So we're just kind of sticking through like what's around right now and what can we do with the right-of-way to connect these facilities.
Because when you said that a lane elimination, they're not supportive in case of increased traffic, well, if you kind of, you know, knew that a mobile home park might become a 300 units.
We looked at that in that section, and there is a new development coming, but still the traffic volumes forecast in the future were still at a level that a lane elimination could occur. That community was more concerned with, they want beautification because they want to better their economic development, and so they were like, why would we put sidewalks and, you know, bicycle lanes? That's not, the priority was more the beautification over the sidewalk. But that's why this study, we're trying to bring people like, hey, you have a sidewalk, you have 8,600 users riding transit along this. You have a sidewalk bike lane right to the south of you. This is not just like a street in your city, it connects. So we're trying to bring that awareness.
Right. Because basically I kind of feel like whatever volume is there is going to be the volume that's there going forward.
Yeah.
I mean, are you going to have flyers and reach out to both the Spanish and Creole populations?
Right now we haven't developed like informational flyers in Spanish and Creole, but we're trying to reach out. We're trying to use the cities to help us spread the word to the community. So might be something that we do.
Well, and is the idea kind of at the end, as much as possible, a uniform, complete streets for the entire corridor?
Yeah, they might change character in some areas, but at minimum, we're hoping to be able to have sidewalks connected and have some sort of a bicycle facility wherever, you know, to connect them all. So it may be, in one section, it may be buffered, in another, it just might be a bike lane, in another, it might be maybe a Jaro, if anything else, but hopefully we're trying to create continuous, at least a bike, continuous bike lanes.
Exciting.
Did you have one question?
No.
No? Anybody else? Questions for Valerie? Okay, great, thank you. Okay, our next item is the Regional Commuter Challenge update. Is that you too?
Yes. I'm speaking on behalf of South Florida Community Services and DOT. So last year we did a Palm Beach MPO countywide commuter challenge, and building on that, South Florida Community Services is now doing a regional challenge for this year. So their challenge actually extends all the way from Monroe County to St. Lucie. So everyone within these town in District 4, District 6 are encouraged to participate in this commuter challenge and long trips that they're not driving alone for work. What's neat about this year is that there's an app, it's called Ride Flag, that you'll be able to log in or create an account and then join or create a team for your place of work if it's not already there. And then you can easily tap on the mode that you're taking, and it like tracks like where you're going and tracks your miles. So that's gonna really help and make it more user friendly. Also, the website for this challenge, there's some flyers at the table, that is sflcommutes.com. And so if you want information or flyers or anything like that, they can provide that to you to help promote it. There's over 100 companies and cities participating in the challenge in the region. And what's kind of neat is that while you're participating on the app, supposedly it geo kind of locates you, and there's businesses offering incentives. So you might be logging in and a prize pops up, like free coffee at X, you know, coffee shop, or free, like there's prizes for participating while you're doing it. So they're trying to educate commuters about transit options in their areas, and you know, trying to encourage more mode split. This is also during Florida Bike Month, National Bike Month, but it's also during National Bike Month, so another reason to try getting out on your bike and commuting using that. So if you have any questions, you can contact them or visit the website, sflcommutes.com. And as I mentioned, there's some flyers, you can take some with you to share, or if you want the electronic version, it'll be with the backup. So just wanted to let you know about that, encourage you to participate and help us spread the word.
Thank you.
I'm downloading now.
Okay, so we're going to skip D because we already did it, and we're going on to E, the draft FDOT Complete Streets Handbook.
Sure.
And that's me.
And I'll just present a few slides as an overview. Some of you may know, on April 25th, the Florida DOT put out the draft Complete Streets Handbook, and they're asking for some feedback. I just wanted to give you all a high-level overview of this effort and maybe some things to consider. So just kind of as a reminder or a flashback to FDOT's efforts in Complete Streets. In 2004, FDOT completed its draft, established its Complete Streets policy with the aim of being inclusive of all ages and abilities, being context sensitive, improving the quality of life, safety, and economic development for all of Florida. In 2015, they created their FDOT created their Complete Streets implementation plan, and we find ourselves now in 2017 with the handbook and design manual drafts out. They're hoping to finalize these documents by the end of the month, with kind of a rollout of their implementation being early 2018. So what's included in the handbook? So the handbook is four chapters, and there are also some appendices as well for extra information. Chapter one describes the roles of FDOT and local governments. Really the focus is on local governments, you know, having a good grasp of their land use and being able to understand and describe their local area context, which rolls into chapter two, where FDOT starts to discuss the context classifications, which is going to be the major way Complete Streets are kind of defined and implemented from here on out. Chapter three talks more about the process of identifying and classifying the roadway system. So the roadway system classifications, plus the context classification kind of equals what is the most desirable design for complete streets in your local jurisdiction, which is what's covered in Chapter 4. So this is the context classification that we've been, that we're talking about. This is what we are having to get familiar with from FDOT. So FDOT has defined 8 different context zones, starting from urban core, which is the most dense, all the way to natural C1. So this is one of the things that we want to pay attention to in the handbook and kind of explain or provide feedback about if the guidance that they provide in the handbook helps define on a local level, you know, the items that you see. I know that a lot of you have been active in our Complete Streets design manual locally, the NPO's design manual. Just for your knowledge, our context zones are similarly kind of broken down. I believe we have 6 zones altogether, where FDOT has 8, and that's because we combine the suburban residential and the rural town.
We didn't subdivide like suburban. So we have rural town, we have rural, natural, and then just kind of a suburban area. And then we have urban general and then urban core. So a couple of the conditions are combined, but that's because when we did the land use analysis, it was way too hard at a countywide level to be like, this is suburban commercial, this is suburban residential, this is, because it's really mixed as a whole in the county, so we just have a suburban area. Sorry, Fran.
Sure, that's fine. That's good to consider for providing feedback and, you know, being able to say that we're on the same page or where things aren't, are different. So another item that's out now, I just want to reiterate, you're asked to give comments on the handbook that's out, but there's also a draft manual that's out. So just in case you want to take an advanced look at it, there's a draft Florida Design Manual, FDM. It's scheduled for rollout in 2018. So there are some portions that are out now, and this kind of gets down to your plans preparation manual. This is going to replace the PPM. So there are some sections where they kind of discuss what complete streets looks like in different areas. Some of the things that we're asking for you to take a look at are what does it look like through on arterials and collectors, interstates, intersections, interchanges. You know, we've had a lot of conversation about those things in our last few meetings. And then, you know, just kind of with your expertise, taking a look at pedestrian facilities, bicycle facilities, shared use paths, and giving, you know, kind of understanding what they're aiming for in those sections. So again, final push and plug. The handbook comments are asked to be received by May 26th. The survey link is in this presentation, which of course will be updated to our website. And if you have any questions, contact Dwayne Carver. He's the lead on this effort. He's the state Complete Streets Program Manager.
I have just a comment. We just got for those of you that participated in our Complete Streets ad hoc working group, where we're developing local Complete Streets design guidelines. We just got the first draft of that today, so I'm going to send it out to the group, and we have another meeting on next week on May 10th to discuss it further. So we hope to have that effort, and we'll bring it to you guys in the fall, likely in September. But we'll have, this is the first draft, and we'll have an interim draft and then the final draft. So we'll be working through this in the summer. So, and hoping that working so that these two documents talk to each other, the DOT's Complete Street Guidelines and then our local guidelines. So just wanted to throw that in, that look out for that if you're on the group.
Anybody have any questions?
No?
Okay, I think that brings us to the summary points of the April 20th governing board meeting.
Sure. I want to take the opportunity to welcome Gary Dunmire to our committee. He was approved by consent agenda at our last NPO board meeting. So thanks for joining us.
Okay. And administrative items. And
just have a real quick comment. Is the local initiatives is a relatively new program that Nick brought in. And, you know, we saw the list, and I said, oh, isn't that great? Well, yesterday we met with Indian Trails and FDOT to build a sidewalk that's going to connect a high school out. It's out in the acreage. High school in County Pines Park, and it's like a mile of sidewalk. And I thought, and FDOT set up the meeting, I thought, hey, they allocated this money, and here it is on the ground, and it's going to happen. And how exciting is that? Because the neighbor sent me kids of walking cleats walking in the middle of the road, and there's no streetlights out there, you know, in the dark. So,
yeah.
And so I'm like, yay, it's working, it's happening.
Yeah, definitely. Our first round of projects through that program are starting to come through the pipeline. So,
yeah. So, thank you. Anyone else? Any other comments? What's happening in your city?
How about you? Are there some things that are happening in West Palm Beach? There's a lot.
I began the meeting like that. Walk audit on the 19th in our Northwest neighborhood to do a safe and healthy walk. We partnered with Florida and Florida Department of Health, and Fran is going to come to our meeting with that, the police on board, and we're going to kind of do a safety health walk in our Northwest neighborhood too, in addition to the other things that we're doing. So that wraps us up. Our next meeting is June 8th, same bat time, same bat place. Okay, can I have a motion to adjourn? David and Gary. Yeah? Thank you.
Hey, Michael.